Welcome to the Adventures Podcast. I'm here with Alice Dartnell.
Hello.
And we are here today to talk about life and success, I guess. That's the main theme of it, right?
So, yeah.
So Alice, you describe yourself as a life and success coach. Do you want to give us a little bit of a background about yourself and how you became a life and success coach?
Yeah, so ever since I was about 15, so we're going back a very long time ago, I always knew that I wanted to own my own businesses. I just always knew that from about 15, 16. I don't know why, that's just something that I knew. But I also knew that I wanted to be in an industry and a business where I could help people. And I also knew that I didn't want to go down counselling or the medical route. So at that age, you kind of don't really know what you want to do. You've got these ideas. And it wasn't till much, much later, sort of 15 years later, that everything started to fall into place. So I did the classic thing of going to university, getting a good degree in business management. I did travelling, I came back, fell into a good corporate job, worked my way up the career ladder really quickly, but always knew that one day, whenever that may be, I would start these businesses, but I just had no idea what. And it wasn't till 2016 that I discovered coaching, and it was actually purely by accident. So I just went on a two-day course on a weekend just to try it out, see what it was. Fell in love with it, realised, actually, this is it. And it sounds really cheesy when I tell people, but I realised this is what I wanted to do. It ticked all the boxes. I could have my own business. I could help people. It wasn't counselling. It wasn't medicine. And it, for me, just was that kind of aha moment where everything just slipped into place. So I started my training in 2016. And then, yeah, from there, just looked to build up my knowledge, my ability, and obviously now my business.
So you call yourself a life and success coach, which I guess is very different from the way that other people would describe themselves, mentors, whatever. Yeah. So what do you mean by life and success?
So first of all, there is a difference between coaching and mentoring. Coaches very much look forward. So sometimes people confuse coaching and counselling. Counselling looks more backwards, and coaching looks more forwards into like, this is where you are now, where do you want to be? It's very different from mentoring, because with a mentor, you generally look for somebody that has been there, done that, got the t-shirt, so that they can tell you exactly what to do, not what not to do. Coaching's really different because I don't necessarily have the same experience or background as my client. I just have to be able to help them get from where they are now to where they want to be. So the way I've badged myself as a life and success coach is because for me, I think it's really easy to blur the boundaries of life and business when you have got your own business, or even if you've got a job that you love or something. I think that 9-to-5 is blurring. So I never felt a need to call myself a business coach, but I definitely have helped clients with their business. But the boundaries are definitely blurred on that. And also with life coaching, you may be stuck, say, for example, on one area, be that relationship or be that your business or your work. But if I can help you develop the skills for that problem, you can take that into other areas of your life as well. So for me, it's kind of a bit of a holistic thing. And I would never dream of telling somebody what their version of success is, but I will help you get whatever your version is. It's just about creating the life you want. It's that life by design. So that for me is why it's life and success coaching.
So when someone does, what's the process when someone wants to engage with you? How do they start?
So first of all, I would never just say, yeah, cool, let's work together. I would always just, let's test it out. Let's have a free consultation just to work out if I am the right coach for you. Or perhaps it's not even coaching that you're looking for, because sometimes people think they need coaching and I've had to turn people away and say, look, I'm really sorry, I don't think I can help you. What you need is X, Y, or Z. And the great thing, obviously, being in this industry is I do know a lot of coaches now, so I'm able to pass people on if I'm not right for them. So yeah, always start off with a free consultation just to see what the issue is, what you're trying to get out of it, what your expectations of coaching are, so that we can take it from there. And then if I'm not right for you, I can put you in touch with someone else.
So what kinds of issues do you try to tackle? I mean, you mentioned obviously that it's more personal rather than business. So what kind of things are you looking at?
Oh God, all sorts. As I said, I'm not there to tell somebody like, this is what success looks like and you have to get it. They'll come to me saying, this is what I want and these are the areas I'm stuck in. And generally I find that I'm helping people that are stuck. So it's somebody, for example, that they've got a big goal, a big ambition, and they don't know where to start. They want that clarity. They want that accountability. They want that extra push, because most of the times you don't actually need coaching. It's like you can go to the gym without a PT, right? But if you want that extra support, if you want to be able to really propel yourself forward, get a coach. So often it's people that are unstuck. They want clarity. They want that accountability. They want the extra kick. Or it's people that feel they can't get to the next level without that extra push. So perhaps they've been stuck in a job for a few years, they're desperate for the promotion or to move on, but they're just stuck. They can't move on, or they've lost their mojo or their motivation. So I've helped people from finishing their PhD, writing their first book, finding more confidence, improving their relationships in their business and their health so they get a better work-life balance, but also more clients. So it really can be everything and anything.
So when should people come to you? So I guess the question is, how do they know that they should, like, they need your services?
Ooh, good question. So obviously I'm biased. I'm a coach and I have my own life coach. So I would say you need a coach all the time. But generally people... Well, it's human nature, isn't it? You know, we experience something, we don't like it, we get frustrated, we whinge about it, and then we don't do anything about it. So we whinge about it some more, and then we leave it, and then we whinge about it again. And generally, this kind of cycle can go on for a bit. So when I talk to people in the consultation, and I say, how long have you been thinking about this problem? Or how long have you been thinking about getting a coach? A lot of times, it's a really long time, you know, maybe 2+ years. And I think they just suddenly get to that point where they're like, right, that's it. I've got to do something about this now. And then they're looking for a coach. But I would urge people, don't wait that long, because you've now just put your life on hold for 2 years, essentially. Because as I said, people don't necessarily need coaching. It's a way to enhance your life. It's a way to help you get clarity, improve your thinking, create a bigger toolkit so that you've got all these resources and confidence for the future. So I would say don't wait. If you've got a big goal, or you're making a life change or a transition, or you just want to take it to the next level, get yourself a coach ASAP.
So I guess, what kind of tools do you use in order to help people? I mean, what kind of, as you're sitting there talking to someone, I mean, what is that process? How does that work?
So coaches generally will follow some kind of model. For me, it's called the GROW model, where I will take people for a process of looking at their goals, their current reality, what can we do to fix it or improve it, and then creating some tangible actions of this is what we're going to do. Because at the end of the day, it is actions. It is action-based. You can't just think differently and then go, oh, right, yeah, okay, that's great. That's just going to happen. You have to put actions in place, right? So for me, I follow this model, and it is just good coaching just comes down to basic questioning. It's asking those questions that you have never dared or dreamt to ask yourself, because how could you? And it's that other perspective coming in as well. And I have had clients tell me before that my questioning is brutal in a good way, because they're like, oh God, you ask me questions that I would never dream of thinking or asking myself. But that's what you need to unlock your potential and get you to the next level, or to help you get that clarity to say, I never actually thought about that. And that's where the magic happens with coaching. So it's that kind of pushing and the nudging and the questioning to get people to unlock the ideas.
How do you know that the person you're talking to is the right person that you should be speaking to? So for example, if I come to you as a coach, and how will I know that you're the right coach for me?
Ooh, good question. I think one of the things you have to look for is rapport, because you have to open up to this person. So I would advise that to anybody looking for coaching, make sure you have rapport with your coach. That doesn't mean your coach has to have been there, done it, like a mentor, but you've got to have some kind of trust and respect and rapport with that person, because you're going to be opening up some stuff. Now, I had one of my best friends attend my workshop the other week. It was kind of a live coaching masterclass event in London. And she was there to help me, bless her, and take notes and whatnot. But she really got involved. And some of the stuff she was saying, she'd never said before. And she was a bit, oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this. But because we were there in a coaching session, not as mates. So she's one of my best friends, and she'd never said this stuff to me. So people really do open up to you, and I would reckon 50% of the time I have clients cry on me, just because you are letting all this emotion and dreams and inspiration come out of you. So yeah, I think that's the number one thing. You have to have good rapport and trust with the person.
All right, so there's a few areas that we were discussing previously, things like time management, mindset, confidence. It'd be interesting to go dive a little bit deeper into that. So time management, right? So so these are kind of areas that you focus on when you're talking to
specialist areas,
right? So time management is a big one. And I think for anyone starting a business, time management is probably one of the most difficult things, because you talk about mindset, confidence, all those kind of things, but actually really organizing yourself to be efficient and effective and not be busy for the sake of being busy is a hard one. So like, what are your thoughts on time management? What do you say to people about it?
Do you know, this for me definitely is a hot topic, and this is why this became one of my specialist areas, is because I didn't used to really be that much of an organised kind of go-getting person. I had a lot of things holding me back when I was younger, like depression and eating disorder, and that's really why I got into coaching. But I look back on that time, and I'm not with regret, because I think it shaped me into the person that I am today, and I probably wouldn't have been a coach if I hadn't gone through that bad experience. But I look back on that period and think, that decade, I'm never getting that time back. Time is such a precious commodity. And now I've kind of learned from those lessons and those mistakes, and I'm in a good place. I am so determined to make the most of every minute and just enjoy life. So this is why it became one of my hot topics, was time management. And I really believe that it doesn't matter how exciting your goal is, how motivated you are, what your skill set is, if you don't know how to manage your time and fit things into your day, you're probably not going to get the success that you want. So in terms of time management, I think there's a lot of misconceptions around time management. So I'm trying to share my insights into time management and productivity, which probably are a little bit different to what people have been previously taught. So I think generally for business owners and entrepreneurs, we have a negative mindset around time management. So I know you kind of just touched on mindset, and that's a lot of times what coaches talk about, but I think we forget to talk about mindset in time management and productivity. So the next time you're out, have a little listen to your friends, your family, etc., and you'll start to notice that actually as a society, I don't know if it's a cultural thing, but we definitely talk about time in the most negative of ways. We say things like we're too busy, we're overwhelmed, we don't have enough time, etc. And I think as a business owner, we get this notion that time input equals quality output, but it doesn't necessarily. So I don't think as an entrepreneur or a business owner that you have to work 16 hours a day to make it. If in fact, I think that can be counterproductive, because you'll start getting tired, your motivation will wane, you'll end up burning out, which will be no good to anyone down the line anyway, and that is definitely not productive. So I think we need to start with our mindset as entrepreneurs and business owners that in fact actually we have got plenty of time, and time is a bit of a weird concept really, isn't it? Because the other day, I'm quite impatient, and I was getting really frustrated with the YouTube ads, and it counts down from 5 seconds. Yeah. Like, you can skip this ad in 5 seconds. Exactly, right? It's the longest 5 seconds, and you're there like pressing, or the lift. You're there pressing that button, like, shut the doors. That is just 5 seconds. If I said, you've only got 5 seconds to call your mum, you'd be like, oh, that's not enough time. So time's really a bit of a concept. It's kind of like how we view it or what the activity is. So I really think we have to start with our mindset when it comes, especially for entrepreneurs and business people, with our mindset with time. Like, I do have plenty of time, I do have enough time to fit everything in. And this misconception that I have to work 16 hours a day to make my business success, I think it's a bit warped, and we need to get away from
I was
that.
At an event, and I said this on a previous podcast, actually, I was in an event a few weeks back, and one of the investors said entrepreneurs are strange people because they work 24/7 to avoid 9-to-5. But I think
I like that.
But I think the one thing that quote misses is that actually you're not working 24/7. What you're doing is you actually have more time to work, in the sense that you don't have to work 9-to-5. You don't have to get up at 7, get ready, get
ready.
Can
we get to commute?
Exactly. So you don't have to do, well, if you don't want to, you don't have to, right? So, and that's the thing. So then actually you could work at 8 o'clock in the evening if that suits you, or you can work at 3 o'clock in the morning, wherever it is that you want to actually work. And I think, you know, I found within my business that the slower I took things, the more effective you become, simply because you're not running around like an idiot trying to get from one place to another.
Yeah.
And, you know, the slower you go, the more you see, right?
So, sometimes you've got to go slow to go fast, I say.
Exactly.
I've got an absolute classic example yesterday. I had to go to a, well, I didn't have to, I went to a baby shower yesterday. And because I'm flying to Mexico later today, obviously I've got a lot to cram in into the next 24 hours. So I'm rushing home from this baby shower, and I'm thinking, great, I can get home about 4 o'clock, and that gives me about 4 hours of productivity to do X, Y, and Z. And I was in such a, oh, got to get home rush, I accidentally put the wrong address into the sat-nav. I chose the wrong one in the last address known, and I ended up putting in Dartford, where my nan lives, instead of Surrey, where I live. And I was about 20 minutes into this journey before I clocked it, when I saw a big, like, welcome to Dartford sign. And I was like, oh my God, you absolute idiot. But it's that, exactly that concept, that I was rushing. And I, what, wasted 30 minutes because then I had to backtrack on myself. Yeah. So I didn't get home at 4 o'clock at all. So it was that if I'd just taken a couple of more seconds to input into the sat-nav properly, you've got to go slow to go fast sometimes. I know it's such like a silly example, but it really did make me think on my drive back, like, yeah,
well, I think all that actually doesn't work. Yeah, no. But I think all that highlights is that the faster you move, the more likely you are to make mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
And that's the thing that causes the most problems. So if you...
Because you undo them.
Exactly, because you're spending the time to undo something that you shouldn't have done in the first place, yeah. Which is really, that makes everything very pointless.
Yeah.
So we touched on mindset, and this is actually quite a big one for me because, you know, we've been on accelerators as part of some of my other businesses, and I've worked with them, and everyone keeps banging on about mindset, but I get the feeling they don't really understand what... So when you're talking through these kind of courses, and you get these people who've never really worked or started their own business telling you how to... start your own business and what mindset you need. And I, that's kind of my pet hate because I think most people who start their own business are already in the mindset that this is something they want to do. Now, whether it's the right thing for them or not is a different matter. And I think through the podcast that we do, we try and help people understand is starting your own business the right thing. But, you know, what are your thoughts on mindset? So what do you mean by mindset?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, actually. And I totally agree that We brand this word, mindset's got a bit of a buzzword nowadays, isn't it? But what does it actually mean? And yeah, you're probably right. If you've started your own business, you've probably got the right mindset, as it were, to do it. But I think for me, what mindset is I try not to see things in black and white as good or bad. You know, this is a good mindset or a bad mindset to have. But is it productive and conducive to like my long-term goals and my vision, etc.? So for me, it's really much about a growth mindset. So this might be something that people have heard about. Carol Dweck, who's a big researcher in this area, and she coined the term growth mindset. And it's about that difference between a growth and a fixed mindset, where the growth mindset is that, I suppose, what we classically call in the corporate world, the can-do attitude of I'm willing to learn, I'm willing to try, I'm willing to fail, which I think is so important in entrepreneurship, versus the fixed mindset of that's very black and white. It's either you're clever or you're not. So we have a big problem in the education system, for example, where people have a fixed mindset and they're a straight A student, but they're not willing to try other things because they can't afford to take their A status. Whereas a growth mindset would be like, yeah, I'll give that a try and I'll learn from it. And I think entrepreneurs need to have that growth mindset out of anybody, because you are going to make mistakes, you are going to make failures, but it's okay if you learn from it. So you absolutely, I think, have to have the growth mindset. So for me, I personally call, when I talk about mindset in like my content and my social media, I always say success mindset. And for me, this is about the growth mindset, but also that self-talk and the self-belief that goes with it as well. So a lot of people suffer things from imposter syndrome and negative sort of self-talk and limiting self-beliefs. So for me, having a success mindset is all those things packaged together. It's about having that can-do attitude, the I'm willing to fail and learn from it. It's the growth mindset. It's the positive self-talk. And it doesn't necessarily mean you bounce out of bed at 6 a.m. every morning thinking, oh my God, life's amazing. It's just about, okay, well, if something does go wrong, I'm going to feel sad about it. How do I change it quickly? For me, that's what mindset's all about.
I think for me also, it's a bit personal, right? Because I think that one of the problems I see with people when they talk about starting a business is that they look at other people and other businesses and copy those, right? And that's I think, is the biggest problem, because you're not going to be Elon Musk, right? Because you don't know actually his background.
Yeah.
You don't know how much money he had from day one. Yeah. You don't know anything about his family. Okay, maybe if you read books, then yeah. But you see what I mean? You
can't compare your journey.
No, you can't. And especially when you think of, I know, you know, things like Airbnb, people say, I want to be the next Airbnb. And you ask them, have you heard of the journey? Have you seen how hard they worked at the very beginning in order to get the first 10,000, you know, overnight stays? And so you can't compare yourself to the success, the end goal. You have to compare yourself to the start piece, right?
Yeah.
And are you really there? And I think that's the thing that people miss out on most, is that, yeah, you can, you have that, people talk about mindset, oh, you know, you need to do it, like you said, no, you need to work 24 hours a day to succeed, but actually, you don't necessarily, you just need to work smart, right?
Yeah.
Which takes me on to the smart goals piece that you're talking about. So, you know, on your website, I think it was you said not the boring smart goals. So that's kind of goal objective setting, I guess, is the area that you talk about, right?
Yeah, so I've actually written a blog about this as well, saying why smart goals are stupid. So with the smart goals, obviously, this is something that I've obviously come from a corporate background, so smart gets branded all the time when it comes to objective settings and appraisals and all that. And for years and years and years, I've done the whole smart things, and I'm very goal orientated. So I was the manager's dream, where I would come into the appraisal having all my smart objectives done. Like I was up for that kind of thing. But over time, I started to realise with the coaching, smart doesn't go far enough. Okay, it's a good basis, but it doesn't really tap into enough.
I guess we should just, people who don't know what smart goals are, do you want to give a quick...
Yeah. So, oh God, this is a test, isn't it? I talk about how much I hate it all the time. Yeah. I've probably forgot what the acronym is, but obviously it's specific, measurable. Yeah. Attainable.
I think so, yeah. Measurable. Wait, no, measurable. R is...
Realistic. T is time bound. Yeah. So I'm not saying that they don't have their place. You know, it does make sense to have a specific goal that is time bound. You know, I want to lose 10 pounds by Christmas. That makes sense. Yeah. But the trouble with smart, it doesn't delve deep enough, because let's be honest, the majority of people, and I think statistics show 92% of people actually fail achieving their goals. So something's going wrong there with smart. So I always advocate in things like my goal setting sessions with clients, etc., is let's dig deeper than that. So have the smart and the measurable and all that, but actually let's connect with the why. Why are we doing this? What's getting us out of bed in the morning? Because I know myself, I'm not a morning person. So I am not that kind of person that's like, woohoo, yay, 6 a.m. I really have to connect with my why of why am I doing this? Why am I getting out of bed? Why have I set that alarm for so early? So for me, smart objectives and goals don't connect with the why. They don't connect with the bigger picture. They don't connect with that emotion, that what's going to get my butt out of bed in the morning. Also, with smart objectives, you know, the fact that they've got to be realistic and attainable. Why? Why should we limit ourselves? Like, don't have a realistic, attainable goal. That's boring. Like, just, I think as well, life does take hard work. And I think it probably takes as much effort to earn £100,000 as it does to earn £40,000. Why not aim big? You know, why not aim for the... For the stars. Don't make it realistic and attainable. Connect with that why. I think as well, with smart objectives, that we need to think as well of things like our resources, what's available to us, including our mindset. So I think smart objectives kind of just scratches the surface. It misses all the kind of good things that really make a goal a goal.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, because it kind of makes them quite bland in a way, really.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, so there was one... I think I saw on your website, I just got to find what it was now. Why motivation doesn't work. Yeah. So that was quite really interesting. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah, okay, so bit of context. My husband calls me the laziest productive person that he knows. And I think it's because of the, like I was saying earlier, that kind of, oh my God, I wasted so much time being depressed and having this eating disorder and just being, blah, I'm not the person I wanted to be. I'm now on this kind of, my own mission to be like, oh, got to utilise every single minute and make life fabulous. And so I'm really, really productive now, but I kind of accidentally fell into being productive because I'm actually quite lazy. So that's why I ended up doing these productivity hacks like, batch and bulk and meal prepping on a Sunday for food and stuff like that. Now, I think in order to do those things, for example, meal prepping and batching and bulking and being organised, I think it takes habit. So people always say to me, gosh, you're so disciplined, you've got so much willpower. And I'm like, oh, actually, I haven't. It's just a habit. And the amount of people that I talk to about time management, and we'll talk about meal prepping, and they go, God, yeah, that's such a good idea. I really need to get into that. And you're like, well, we'll do it then. And they go, and I think people forget it's a habit. So I don't think motivation actually works. Because if we rely on feeling like it and feeling motivated, quite a lot of the time you're not actually going to feel like it. So I love the gym, I love keeping fit, but more times than not, I don't feel like it at the time. Once I get there and I'm halfway through, I'm like, oh, this feels amazing. But at that time that I'm walking out the door to the gym, I'm like, I'd probably rather be on the sofa watching Netflix. It's
a bit too wet today if I get out.
Exactly. Yeah. So my motivation isn't there. So I think if we always rely on motivation to do something, we probably actually wouldn't be very successful or achieve the things we wanted to do. We're relying or waiting on feeling like doing something. Well, that feeling is probably never going to come. So I think this is why motivation doesn't work. You have to switch in for habits.
I guess that's why they had the book, you know, that book, Seven Habits of... How many habits of highly successful people? And they didn't really talk about the motivation of highly successful people, did they?
No.
Which is the thing. So, but that's really kind of goes it goes contrary to what everyone out there talks about in the, you know, in that kind of social, the entrepreneur, that kind of, you have to follow your passion, right? You have to follow this and be motivated and, you know, got to get out of bed and do that, that one thing
the
that you love.
5 a.m. thing, No, I tried it for a bit. It doesn't work for me. It just makes me grouchy.
So can we talk a little bit about your journey then? So so what were you doing before? I know you said you were in corporate
world. Yeah, so I accidentally fell into the corporate world after I came back from university and travelled. I got a workplace kind of experience, like a for a summer in a membership organisation. Did not know this was a sector, did not know this was a thing, and did it for a month, and then they called me back and said, do you want a job? Now, obviously, this was around 2008, 2009, so we all know what happened then. Jobs were a little bit thin on the ground, so when someone offers you a job, I was like, oh my God, yes, I'll take it. So I accidentally fell into this membership sector, was pretty good at it, and climbed the career ladder quite quickly. So I've always worked in that industry before I left to start my coaching business. But basically, it my kind of skill set and what I was doing was about engaging people, engaging the members. I was that kind of middleman, the conduit between the organisation headquarters and the members. So it's always, I guess, been a people-based role, engagement, comms, that kind of thing.
So what then, I know you said you've always wanted to start your own business, but what actually made you take the leap? After that course that you took, that's still there's still some extra decisions to be made, right?
So I am a big believer that things happen for a reason, and without getting like too spiritual woo-woo, I really do believe that bad things happen and you go, oh my God, how am I going to get through this? But they end up being probably some of the best things that have ever happened to you, like redundancies and stuff. So 2016, that's when I started the diploma and started doing my studies, and I was 30 at the time. You know when you have life plans, you've got your whole life mapped out, you know exactly what you're doing and when, and I don't know why, I kind of thought I'd do 10 years in corporate, and at 35 I would have made it to director by that point, and I would have saved some money, and then I could have slowly built up my coaching business on the side and slowly reduce my hours. So reduce the corporate hours and build clients on the side. That was the grand plan. Did not happen like that whatsoever. I lost my job in 2018, and at the end of 2018, just before Christmas, obviously not ideal, and had this big trip actually to Sri Lanka for a month booked, and everyone was like, oh, that's perfect, great timing, because you know you've lost your job and now you can think about what you want to do in Sri Lanka. And I know why people were saying that, but actually when it happens to you, that was probably the worst time to go away, because I did not want to be enjoying myself picking tea in Sri Lanka and enjoying the beaches. I wanted to be on my own and working out what I was going to do with my business, because I got to that stage where I thought, why am I waiting another 3 years? And I had this grand plan that I was going to start this business when I was 35. But as I said, I'm a believer that things happen for a reason. And I was like, maybe this isn't my path. Maybe I'm not meant to be in corporate for another 3 years. And my passion clearly is coaching. Why am I not doing that sooner? So yeah, it wasn't kind of the journey that I expected, but I don't think these things ever are, they?
No, not at all. So what did you find as your challenges when you first started out?
I think one of the biggest challenges was the sudden switch. So one day I was this membership engagement expert, talking on stages, writing blogs, creating networking events. And then literally overnight, I suddenly was like, no, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm a coach now. And I think that for me was a really hard mindset shift. So we're talking about mindset, right? I think that for me was like, And because I deep down secretly always knew that I wanted to do that, I hadn't really spoken about it. I hadn't really made those things clear, because I still knew I had, well, I thought I had another, what, 3, 4, 5 years in corporate. I was going to get to the next role, going for director roles and interviews. I couldn't then be seen to be going public on social media saying, yeah, in a few years I'm ditching corporate, I'm going to go. So I kind of could have kept it to myself. It was quite secret, I suppose. So then to suddenly have to lay myself bare and say, yeah, I'm doing it. I'm actually a coach, and that's what I've always wanted to do. It felt quite weird. So for me, it definitely was a mindset thing. And I keep a journal of my journey. And I remember writing one of the entries quite early on where I was explaining like about this mental mess up in my head, where I think one of the things that scared me the most was for years, what, 15 years more, I'd said, oh, one day I'm going to have my businesses. And then suddenly it was like, oh, that one day is today. Right. And the scary thing was that, and I'm more comfortable with it now, but the scary thing was like, oh, I'm actually now living the dream and trying to create the life that I always said I was going to do. And that is actually scary, liberating, but scary. So that for me, I think, was the biggest challenge, that mindset and that shift from corporate to.
And that, yeah. So then obviously that is obviously a huge, huge shift in mindset. So, you know, what did you do to alleviate that? How did you actually, you know, kind of get comfortable with it all?
Yeah. This is boring. Sorry, this answer is so boring. Practice. So I always say, you know, they say practice makes perfect. Mm. I say no, practice makes progress. I always teach that. And it is just practice. It's like that habit thing. It's not motivation, it's habit. And I just think everything boils down to that, like just boring, basic habits and practice. So I started going to networking events, and the first time was so uncomfortable when you meet someone, go, oh, hi, I'm Alice, I'm a life coach. And I couldn't say it properly because I felt like a bit of a fraud that, oh, I'm not really a life coach, because 2 minutes ago I was like this engagement membership expert. Yeah. And if you looked at my LinkedIn, that's what all my LinkedIn stuff said. So for me, it was just practice. That was one of the biggest things, was going out to networking events and practicing your 60-second pitch, your elevator pitch, your this is who I am, and confidently saying, hi, I'm Alice, I'm a life and success coach, and saying it like you mean it. So actually, one of my tips for anybody that is about to start a business and thinking about it, and I gave this advice to my cousin the other day. He said, oh, in a few years, I'm going to start my business. I was like, start networking now, as if you've got this business, so that you can practice being that business persona, because it is a huge shift.
Yeah, there was someone said to me a while back that, you know, in your 20s, you learn your skills, your 30s, you build your network, and your 40s, you use your skills in your network. Mm. I mean, I kind of followed that in a way. So, and I have to say that does work. So once you build your network, everything becomes a lot easier.
Yeah.
Because already you've got people that you can say, hey, I'm doing this now.
Yeah.
Is that interesting?
Yeah, and I don't think I really had that, understood the power of the network until now, really. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone I've ever talked to in the service or kind of, well, even any kind of industry, really,
yeah.
99% of their work comes through the network, you know, no matter how much you try and believe in social media. And,
yeah.
Okay, if you're selling a product, then AdWords and, you know, advertising's fine. Yeah. But if you're doing services, then, yes, people, it's trust, still a trust business, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, especially something as personal as coaching is, yeah, as I said, you know, you've got to have that rapport and the trust, and you're not just going to Google somebody, look at the top one and go, well, yeah, they're all right. It's, yeah, you've got to have that trust.
So practice is one thing, networking is another thing. So, and habits, obviously. Mm-hmm. So what other top tips do you have for someone who's looking to kind of start their own thing?
I would say, leading on from like the networking thing, to share your idea with everybody. I think as entrepreneurs and business people, we get very scared sometimes in sharing our idea in case someone else nicks it. But you've got to have an abundance mindset, because one person... Well, two people can have the same idea, but you're going to put your own unique spin on it based on your experience, who you are, your personality, etc. So even though that the idea is exactly the same, you know, there's thousands of coaches out there, there's thousands of life coaches out there, but everyone's bringing something different to the table. So I would say that don't be afraid to tell people what you're doing, your ideas. And especially, for example, myself, I know some of my ideas are a little bit different. So the fact that I say with my time management, don't work from to-do list. The fact that I say, don't rely on motivation and get up at 5 a.m. I know that I'm saying something that's a bit different. And I think it took me a bit of confidence building to be able to do that, to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to go against the grain here. But yeah, I'd say just get out there and share your ideas, because also you don't know who you're going to meet. And the amount of times I've shared an idea with somebody, just because we're chatting over coffee, not because I'm trying to elicit feedback, but they'll go, have you thought about this? Can I put you in touch with this person? Or you should read this book. And it's just given me so much more ideas and material and knowledge. So yeah, just try and speak to as many people as possible, even if they're not in your industry or your mates or whoever, just speak to as many people as possible about your ideas and what you're doing.
I always find that quite strange, actually, when people say that, you know, we have to sign NDAs a lot with what I do. And people kind of want me to sign NDAs for their ideas, and I'm like, well, yes, can do it. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Simply because, you know, you're not, it's very rare that you come across a unique idea, right?
Yeah.
And even if you do, then it's all about execution, really, at the end of the day. And so, I mean, Google was the 13th search engine when it first launched, right?
Yeah.
And now look at it. So it's all about execution and actually the quality of your product or whatever it is, your service that you're bringing. So you touched a little bit on the fact that there's thousands of life coaches out there. Mm. So how do you find a good one?
Ooh, good question. I think it definitely does, again, boil down to like things like rapport, which I think is why the consultation call is so important, because you have to have that voice-to-voice, that, are we connecting? Or is this making sense to me? So, yeah, I think definitely to find the right life coach would be to make sure you've got rapport, have a consultation with them, and also don't be afraid as well to ask for testimonials. I always say when I'm doing my consultation calls, if you want to speak to any of my previous clients, just let me know. Now, obviously with GDPR, I can't just go dishing it out, but I'm sure if I asked a previous client, do you mind if so-and-so gets in touch with you? They're not going to say no. Or, you know, my testimonials are on my social media and my website and stuff anyway. So I'd just say, you know, do your due diligence. But also I am a big believer of gut. So just go on your gut instinct. Like, is this person connecting with me? Do they get me? Do they get my issues? And obviously every coach is slightly different in how they deliver things, in their models, all those kind of things. So don't be afraid to ask that. Like, how do you work? How does the session run? I personally work in from packages of 3 months, because I don't think you can have a one-off session, whereas some clients do pay as you go. Personally, it doesn't work for me. I want to be there for the journey, not a one-off. My sessions are an hour, and generally are on Skype because I want to be able to see your face. But I know some people that will do telephone, and I know some of my friends who are coaches, they do 30-minute sessions. Some people do an hour and a half, 2-hour sessions. So yeah. You've got to find what works for you.
So how do people find you?
So for me, people find me either on LinkedIn or Instagram. I am technically on Twitter, but I'm not very active on that. Or my website, just alicedartnell.com.
All right, so last question. If you could go back in time 20 years and talk to your younger self, what advice would you give yourself?
Oh my God, right, 20 years, how old would I be?
Don't give away your age.
Oh God, I'd be so young. What would I say to myself? I would try to encourage myself to not be afraid to be different, and to let go of any limiting self-belief. So when I was growing up in my teens, I had, I suppose, like a lot of teenage, especially girls, a lot of comparison, a lot of, I just want to fit in and be normal. And growing up being half Japanese at a time when A, that was not cool, and B, there wasn't a lot of mixed race kids in my school, I hated being different. I was always desperately trying to fit in. And I remember being on a school trip once, and my mum had given me rice balls, like onigiri rice balls, which I love. And now they're really popular, they're in wasabi and places. But back in the day, no. People are like, oh, what are you eating? Oh, fish, oh, you're disgusting. You're like, I just want a tofu sandwich. Like, I just want it to be normal. But now I'm older, I'm like, no, that difference is making me who I am, and it's given me such a different perspective on life. And I think I'm great at building rapport with people and understanding their point of view, because I was so different growing up. And I had so many limiting self-beliefs that I thought I was stupid, fat, this, that, and the other. And I just think, God, if I could have just let go of some of those, it would have just really helped my kind of experience and confidence growing up. So yeah, I think that'd be my message to my younger self, is just don't be afraid to be different, and let go of some of those limiting self-beliefs.
That's very good advice. All right, well, Alice, thanks for that. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much.
Cheers.